kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I didn't die between the last show and this one, so.
Very true.
I'm fine.
Very true. It is a party cast. It is one of them episodes, so Chris and Purnell are here as well. How are you two doing?
I did die between the last show and this show.
Oh, man.
That's mildly unfortunate.
F for respect.
It sounds like you're doing okay, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're no worse for the wear.
I ran out of sick days at work, so I still have to go in.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Sick days like the plague. Boredom. Because why not?
Why not, indeed. Oh, so how is everyone? I'm happy. I got my Series X pre-ordered today.
Nice. I make somebody. These damn pre-orders, man, can kiss my ass. I just gave up. I gave up. I tried for a PlayStation. I tried for an Xbox. And in both cases, now, first of all, I'm going to just flat out state it. Unlike previous launches, I didn't have the window of time to like just kind of chill. I'm like, well, if I'm patient and I work the sites, things will just happen. Like, no, I'm like in the middle of freaking meetings, got people calling me for reports. Meanwhile, I got a window. I was like, come on, PlayStation, come on, Xbox, get my thing. And all that happened was you put the damn thing in the cart and you're trying to check out, and it was just like,
crash. Do
Meanwhile, if you wanted to build a bundle, oh, they got shit. It goes right to that shit. You build all your bundles, but you ain't checking out with that either. It was the stupidest crap. So at first you're like, okay, I guess that just means that it isn't quite ready yet. And then nope, all of a sudden sold out. Like, but I've been here for an hour. How is it sold out? Well, you see, because our site is bullshit. And, I mean, blunt. I prefer the days where you could just go to the store. It was only going to the store. Deal with the line and pre-order.
Hey, because, that's what I did. I went old school. I went up to GameStop. Ashley drove home at like 7:30. She passed by the GameStop up by Walmart and she saw a couple people out there. So she drove home. She's like, listen, there's people already there. If you want to do this, you should probably go up now. I ended up being the seventh person in line and I got Series X number 6 out of only 8.
I was about to say, you lucked out then, because I didn't do like a morning wait in line or anything, but I stopped at the store during lunch break and picked up 13 Sentinels. And while there, I was just kind of chatting with them about how the BS of these pre-order programs. The guy was like, oh, yeah, we only got 6 Xboxes to pre-order.
Damn.
I was like, how the hell you only get 6? That's some bull. He's like, can you imagine how much the mall got? The mall probably got more, but far below what they're used to getting with these things. So,
then they only had 2 S's.
Wow.
Yeah. Although, so, funny enough, people would come up and they'd be like, we only have 1 S left if you want it. And they're like, fuck it. Never mind. Bye.
Your store was 8. Yours was 8 X's and 2 S's.
Yep.
I see. You want to get another chuckle, though. I'm not sure how this is going to play out, but in the news that we all know was going to happen, we all knew Xbox X units are selling at a rate of a 747% growth over previous
one X's.
Yeah, the one
X. Not the series.
You got to remember, that's a system that's long discontinued. So none of them have been selling. If one sold and then 700 sold, that's a 700% increase. And that's not many systems.
That'll do it then. But holy cow, it's like I could just picture somebody getting confused there, but you're saying you can't like even buy, because I saw like an image where you brought it up where it was like they were claiming like that the sales rate went up, but that might be why. If there was like one on the marketplace and it sold, then boom, there it is.
Yeah, they're not available new anymore. The Xbox One X and the Series, or the Xbox One S Digital, those are discontinued and they don't sell them new anymore.
Thank God.
Unless, like, you found one that just hasn't sold and has been sitting on the shelf.
It was pretty much on Amazon where people were getting them.
It was on Amazon. Exactly. That's what it was. It was on Amazon. But that makes more sense then, because Amazon will easily have discontinued stuff if someone happens to have one for sale on their site. But, whew, it's still funny, but not nearly what it would have been if they were available for purchase. See, I'll give them that credit. And the naming is weird, but the fact that they were like, well, the other one's not even available to purchase anymore, so there's no error. That covers the due.
No. No, I understand the reason for the discontinuing those models and not confusing people when it comes to retail this fall, but I still don't like the naming scheme. It's still dumb, but...
The thing that gets me about it, though, is that it's supposed to just be called Xbox.
Yeah.
But, you know, the series element of it is because they do plan to have future versions that will be a different series name.
You could just call it, like, well, then again, I don't know how where you go off of the when it's like Xbox and they're not doing the numbering system. I will admit it also gets a little tougher. But as far as this current build goes, it could have just went with Xbox Digital, Xbox Prime, or Xbox Full or something. I don't freaking know. But not.
I think the reason for not using something like, you know, Prime or awesome Xbox Prime. Pro or something like that is because they don't want it to be alienating and be like, oh, you can't enjoy this unless you're a hardcore gamer. Like, Xbox has really been going out of their way to come across as more inclusive regardless of what or how you play. If they use a naming convention like that, it could be a turnoff to people who would otherwise be like, well, I'm not that kind of gamer. I just want to play Artifacts Monday games in 4K, you know? And
that's all you're going to do with a Series X, isn't it? You're just going to play.
We know it. We
Artifacts
know it.
Games
we all know
in
it.
8K, well, 120 frames per second.
I genuinely cannot disagree with that sentiment, but I do have to ask, and if anybody's going to know it, it'd be you two. What does the S and the X stand for?
Nothing.
They're just ways to...
X and S.
Originally, the S was slim, but... So that's kind of just why it stuck around. And then I guess the X was to...
Extreme.
It kind of, you know, denotes that it's for more hardcore players without the same...
Aki's asking why they didn't just number the systems, and the reason why is because they would be one number behind PlayStation right now. Yeah. They would be on the Xbox 4, and there would be a PS5.
Wait. Oh, rewind for a second. Is that like what their official statement was for why they didn't go with numbers?
Yes, that is why they went with the 360 instead of the Xbox 2. There was the PS3.
PlayStation 3,
Yeah, there was the PS3 and the Xbox 360.
Look here, bitches. We're like 354 versions ahead of you now. What do you call it?
The Xbox One was totally because it was meant to be an all-in-one system.
Yeah. And now they're just back to Xbox.
I just can't believe that's really what it was, though. They just didn't want to be a number behind them.
Yeah.
It makes sense in marketing, though.
It does. If you're an idiot and you're in a store and you see a 4 and a 5, which one are you going to go for?
Oh, my God. I mean, I'm not going to knock what you're saying, but it's just one more statement that just confirms people are fucking dumb. Like, hey, there's a PlayStation 4 and an Xbox 3. Well, 4 is larger than 3. So clearly, no! It makes no fucking sense! I'm just imagine that at the grocery store, even like just various grocery items that have like numbers, basic 4. Well, that's got 4 things in it. That's better than all these other cereals.
Look here.
Hey, 4 razors versus 3 razors.
There's Fruit Loops in that box. That's an infinite amount. It could be any number of loops. I better buy that one. Honeycomb. There's only one in there.
Hank, I think that Nintendo could be like Nintendo 7.
that's a lot of Nintendo.
Yeah.
The biggest Nintendo yet.
And if you think about it, Honeycomb has what, like 6 holes in it? Fruit Loops only has 1. I mean, suck it, Fruit Loops. You and your 1 hole bullshit.
Exactly. That's 6 times the whole
block. Trying to be a donut without actually being a donut.
Yeah, crunchy had, fruit donut. Fuck you.
Honeycomb had 1 Nightmare Fuel mascot more than...
I hate people so much. God damn. That doesn't make sense. It's just 6 and 7. Why? I'm going to go to bed with that shit. Just noodling around up there. I thought we hit the crux with the Wii to Wii U, but no, numbers. Shit. We got people that can't even agree on a nomenclature for solving equations on the internet, but we got people talking about bigger numbers makes better products. Oh, Jesus shit. Oh,
I didn't know that. People are dumb.
People are fucking dumb.
People are dumb.
You know, it's one thing for us to all poke fun at it and stuff, but if you really stop and think about it, think about how much money gets spent on marketing and research just so they have to hear this shit. Imagine being the dude who spent your whole damn 5 years of your job at Microsoft coming up with a name for a console, and then marketing comes back and goes, yo, it's one behind what the PlayStation is, and people won't buy it.
You know what he probably does, or she does? They probably go, I'm still getting paid, but I got to say, people are fucking dumb. That's what they're saying.
Also, like, opinions are my own and not representative of my employer.
I really love this world where it like takes 5 years for a like corporate marketing person to come up with the number four.
Look, you think it doesn't?
It makes me think about that guy's like Simpsons totally did. Like, what was that? The Simpsons where they brought up where it's like Itchy and Scratchy's getting old. We need to save it. They're like, come up with a new character. And the guy goes up there, he's like, I don't know, come up with something, you know, like Poochie, but better, you know? And I'm like, well, just go Poochie. But it's like, Jesus crap. And I'm trying, it was like another thing they did where it was like, I can't remember what the dumb name was, but it was like, it took us all night, but it was worth it. This bland ass name. But, jeez. And also just, you make that, but you also make that comment, but I mean, you can dive deeper into that. It's not just that they did the research, but picture the research. They had whiteboards and they had graphs and pie charts
and all these things. And PowerPoint slides and yeah,
so much zooming.
Remember when it was a huge deal that the PS5 was confirmed that they were calling it the PS5 and they showed a logo that was the same as the PS4 except it was a number 5 and people lost their shit?
I remember seeing that. I was like, that makes sense. Like, I just saw it, said it makes sense and walked away. It's like, see, they're in a different position, which is why it blows my mind for anybody to get excited for it. It's like, okay. Whereas with Xbox, they kind of went with their own style. So they're still in that nebula. Where they can, also Nintendo, I guess, where it can just be like, where's the new thing going to be? Is it going to be Scorpion? Omega? Is it going to be Diamond? We don't know. PlayStation's like, you know, it's 5. It's going to always be 5. If anything, if they went with anything that wasn't a number, people would have likely really lost their shit. Because then they'd be like, no, I can't light it up with my other cards. I got the PS1, 2, 3, and 4s, but now I got the PS Spade. What am I doing with this? Like,
I'll admit. PS Series X.
PS Series X.
So I have a question. Do you think that at the Sara Lee marketing department, they use pie charts?
Fuck you.
Not everybody.
I don't be your friend anymore.
I don't feel too bad. I'm the dad jokes are in lately. I told a really dumb one online today because it just came to mom eating my sandwich. And I say, what is Waluigi's favorite convenience store? Wah, wah.
Oh, God.
I cringed. I sobbed. And then I posted that shit. If I got to suffer, everyone suffers.
And then he shared it with us because
I hate you so much.
Not only is it like, you know, an odd like video game dad joke pun, but it's also regional.
Put the extra work.
Really stacking things up against yourself on that.
Yeah. I'm going for the high score.
Jumping back a bit, Awesome Prime says PSX Xbox Edition. Fun fact, there is a PSX.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a version of the PlayStation 1 in Japan that, what the hell was it? Was it the developer style?
The little tiny PlayStation was called the PS1, and 1 was spelled out.
Yeah, I know there was an actual PSX in Japan.
There was. But I can't all 100% remember what it was because I keep confusing it with NetEuros, and NetEuros wasn't quite there. And that's maybe what PSX actually was a PlayStation with development capabilities a la Netheros, but I need to look it up.
No, it was a PS2 DVR. That's what the PSX was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So it was a PS2 DVR. Yeah, you learn stupid shit on this show. A PSX exists.
The thing is, I wonder how many people even still remember Netheros. All I know about is that's where Devil Dice came from, and I'm thankful for that. Who the fuck's Devil Dice?
I'm like, yeah. Exactly. Not many people know what the hell Devil Dice is. I will agree with you on that. But you know what is really cool, Purnell? I showed you a picture of this earlier.
Delta?
My drink this episode. I am drinking Mountain Dew Violet.
I gotta ask, how does it taste in any way similar to Pitch Black?
Because that was no. My first. That's the surprising really? Thing. Pitch Black was like a more bitter grape. This is like a sweeter grape. It is delicious.
Weird.
Yeah, but if you have an FYE in your area, check them.
Oh, wait a minute. So you bought that locally?
Yes.
I will check. I saw I had Japanese character. I had like, I thought it was like kanji at the bottom, or was like, yeah, I think it was, I'm not sure. It was Japanese characters, though.
Yeah.
So I assumed you imported it.
Yeah, FYE sells like import candies and sodas and energy drinks and weird shit like that. And they had cans of these. They were priced at $5.99 for a can, so I was like, fuck it, I'll get one. I want to try it. I took it up to the register. It was $1.99, so I grabbed five.
I've been meaning to go there anyway to get some Garbage Pail Kid cereal and Garbage Pail Kid hot sauce. So
I saw the Garbage Pail Kid hot sauce there, and I thought of you immediately.
Are you supposed to eat those together?
I'm sure somebody did. They could be their favorite Garbage Pail Kid, Luke Puke.
Oh, man. I mean, if there was one brand that sold a cereal as well as a hot sauce next to each other.
It'll be Garbage Pail Kids. Licensed products.
Like, hot sauce flavored cereal.
Mm-mm. Honestly, the thought of that terrifies me. I mean, there's hot sauce counteracts
the burn.
Well, contrary to popular belief, it might not. Hot sauce ice cream. I learned that lesson. It does not. It just confuses you. And then you just freak the fuck out. Because there's nothing saving you from the burn. You just got to suffer. Mole ice cream is what I had. Chocolate mole ice cream. Mm. And it burned like hell. And nothing took care of it. My brain just got confused. Like, my mouth is cold and excruciatingly hot. What is happening here? None of this should work. But it did. And it was dark magic.
Mm. Oh, man. Anyway, we have games to talk about. Should we get to work?
Maybe. Perhaps.
Maybe. Purnell, you're starting off. You should be excited.
All right, let's get this shit going.
Come on, you were excited about this game shit when it came in.
I laughed my ass off and then said, let's do it. And yeah.
Yeah, first game to talk about tonight is called Moro Crystal H, developed by Idea Factory and Compile Heart, published by East Asia Soft, released September 17th on the Switch for $39.99. Recruit monster girls and retrieve the Bra of Darkness in a Mo-filled dungeon RPG. Purnell, tell us about this one, you pervert.
No, actually, I'm going to be blunt. I like this game a lot, actually. I did not expect to. Well, correction, I expected to think it was fun. I expected to be legit good. But it's legit good. So what is it, though? So you're a character named Xenox who comes to a town looking for his father for whatever reason. And in the process of doing so, you stumble across a robbery in the form of Dark Atome, which is essentially a otter who runs off with, like you already stated, the Bra of Darkness from the sacred temple, which houses the Bra of Darkness and his companion garment, the Panties of Light. And at this point, now that you know this burglary has occurred and you stumble into it, for whatever bizarre reason they came up with, being just like you were there to see it as a witness, you go along with a character named Luana, who is a Pegasus girl, to retrieve this bra, because apparently by separating the Bra of Darkness and the Panties of Light, it creates a rift in the universe, which gives birth to like the demon child womb thing, whose name I don't remember, and it spells disaster for the world. So you get to reunite these two garments before the world goes to shit. And the way this works is that you go on a quest to basically follow the Dark Aton on his path of departure, which takes you through a series of dungeons. And the way he goes about, you know, working his escape is that as he progresses through these dungeons, he comes across monster girls who live within these environments. And he applies the Bra of Darkness to them, which in turn corrupts them. And now they are hostile towards your party. So as you're exploring dungeons, you'll come across monster girls who have been afflicted, who have been cursed by the Bra of Darkness, and you have to fight to cure them of the... the actual dark energy.
It's just so ridiculous. I love it.
That's the funny thing about it. Like, I was, and I'll talk about towards the end, but like, I was thinking about how I was going to do this review, and I was like, I want to play it as straight as possible. But at the same time, the plot is fucking ridiculous. There's no way getting around it. It's a ridiculous plot. And I was going to just let it ride. But so you basically end up fighting these girls. And I guess I'll go into the how you fight them shortly. But before that, I should just say how combat works. Dungeon crawling is a basic dungeon crawl. You know, step on tiles, goes tile by tile. When you come across enemies, you have a party of up to five characters. They're all monster girls. The monster girls themselves have a variety of attacks. One, they always start with one, which is like a basic attack, and then like a basic either physical or elemental strike for a basic basic attack, and then either a physical magic attack, a physical element attack, or a magical physical element attack. God damn, I'm drunk. And basically, as you fight battles and get more experience, you'll learn more abilities for that character. But the enemies show up. They're all like weird, like they're basically H monsters, which is hentai monsters, pervert monsters. And you fight them. They all look weird. Like one monster is a weird ball monster who's got got boxer shorts on his head, and he's got a bulge protruding from the boxer shorts that he's wearing on his head, and there's an X on the bulge on the boxer shorts. You get the idea. They're pervert monsters. Anyway, you fight them. You use like various, you know, elemental weaknesses against them to defeat them, blah, blah, blah. But when you get to the girls, however, the battles change a little bit. Sometimes they'll be flanked with additional hentai monsters to back them up. But for the most part, the way the battles work is the girl has hit points, and various parts of her garments have hit points and their own respective weaknesses to go with them. Your goal is to do one of two things. Either A, completely disrobe them, or B, not completely disrobe them, but get through her entire hit point gauge. And if you pull that part off, you'll get like an actual bonus called the Gent bonus. Shocker. But once you've pulled off either of those things, you'll go into the part of the game that I've never liked, but at least it's easier in this game, which is basically like the rub mini game, which you have to do to purify them of the dark curse. So they come up like an image of them on the screen. You get like a minute, and you have to find three various essential erogenous zones. You rub them out, and if you can pull off all three, you purify the girl, and she joins your party, and you get a new monster girl that joins your team, which means she gets new, you know, attacks, blah, blah. Now, two other things I'm mentioning for these girls. Well, I say multiple things because this is partly why the game is actually pretty good. One, you can change essentially what's their classes by changing their clothing. So as you go around the game, you'll find panties in like various treasure chests or from enemies or whatever. And when you change their draws, you change their skills and their stats too. So every girl gets three different builds that you can choose between and level up independently stat wise. Like there are eight, their stat levels are the same, but their skill builds as you level up. So you can switch between those as you see fit and customize your party. In addition to that, you can also do a few other things. There is something called Doki Doki Shooter. And if you remember that game I reviewed a few weeks ago called Waifu Shooter, you might already be in a well place for what this game is. So the idea is that just like Waifu Shooter, an image of the girl appears on the screen. You are a ship who's flying, and you have to use one button to fire bullets that kill flying hentai monsters. You use the other button to drop bombs, which disrobe the girls. And you're trying to find hidden crystals on the girls. If you find the crystals, you smash the crystal, and you open a portal to one of their inner dimensions, which is basically a one-floor dungeon. If you defeat the boss at the end of the dungeon, you do one of three things. You unlock a new skill that's only accessible through that activity. you unlock an additional intimacy heart, which is a part of, like, you know, building up your, you know, tech, you know, kind of communications with them or whatever, from like story dialogues and chats and having them in battles. And also, it was like one other thing. Oh yeah, the ability to wear different bras and panties separately, because apparently bras affect stats and panties affect the skills. And if you can separate the two, that allows you to customize them that much more than you can at the start, which again is weird in description, but in execution, it's surprisingly effective. So, and there's a lot of girls in the game, which means each girl has three hidden dungeons inside of her, and you've got, you know, all the dialogue for the intimacy level, which you get through, like, going to the inn and talking with them. And you have a lot of content just for communicating with a bunch of characters, and they actually have legit dialogue. And I will say the thing I like the most about this game compared to the previous one was that in the previous game, it just was like, it's obviously what the gameplay is like, but the main character even just made me and just annoyed me with, like, how skeevy he felt. He's like, I don't know how to talk to girls, but I have a harem of girls around me. And I don't know how to do, it was just awkward as shit. This game, at least, is somewhere where the guy seems fairly normal. He ends up in a situation he doesn't want to be in, but he's like, well, I kind of have to go along with it. And the whole time, he's kind of playing it straight, which I like. He should play it straight. It makes it digestible more so than the other guy in the previous game. He's wanted to kind of hit with a truck every time he said some shit. But this guy I can get down with. He's okay. And honestly, the voice work is okay in the game. The gameplay's solid. And honestly, I just genuinely like it.
Aki has a question. She wants to know if there's any slime girls in the game.
I haven't come across a slime girl, but I would not be surprised if one exists. There's like 80 girls in the game.
Damn. And to jump back a bit, the other game you were talking about is called Waifu Uncovered.
Oh, Waifu Uncovered. It
is also published by East Asia Soft. So, rock on East Asia Soft. You're giving us some good shit.
Now, I was thinking about it before, which kind of, I was talking about it to a friend of mine the other day, because I was like, yeah, I'm reviewing this game that I'm having a lot of fun with. And I was like, I'm trying to think how I want to go about reviewing. He was like, why? I was like, well, thing about it is, like, let's be honest. Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's a bra of destiny and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, if I weren't reviewing this game, a lot of times I'm reviewing the game where it's like, okay, so the goal of the game is just like a bunch of people in the room. You go in there and blow their fucking brains out. But if you get a high enough combo of blowing their brains out, you'll get a super gun to just nuke the entire room at once. You know, it's like, if for some reason it's always so much easier to talk about hyper violence than to talk about hypersexuality in games. And I'm like, I don't want to be that way anymore, because honestly, the game works. The game freaking works. And I think it's a lot of fun to play. But the story is freaking absurd. Let's not mince words here. It's an absurd fucking plot.
Personally, I would rather see nudity than over the top gore. Like, I could not handle the violence in The Last of Us 2. It was just too visceral and too real for me. But high anime titties, bring them on.
Bring them on, and I will high five that, because I'm going to lie. Shoot, I'm the type of guy where it's like, I can get down with violence, but it needs to be within some sort of reasonable context. If it's just violent for the sake of violent, it just annoys me. Like, for example, remember that game Manhunt from way back in the day? Of course, now it's tame as shit, but back then it was like peak violence in the game, and I just didn't want anything to do with it. It's not because I couldn't handle violence. It was because it was violent for the sake of being violent. I had time for that. At that point, I'd rather just have a game where it's like, well, your goal is to just run around and flash your dick in front of a lot of people and then not get the cops to catch you. So it's like, that's... There you go. It's like, I'd rather have that than just running around stabbing people with shards of glass and shit just because... that's just where you're at, and that's the situation you're in. Like, no. So, in that regard, it's like, I should be able to talk about any of them easily and cleanly without concern. And when regards to this game, if it were a turd of a game, I'd have no qualms stating it. But, however, it's actually a quality dungeon crawler experience. It's a lot of fun. Tons of customization. The music's actually pretty decent. The voice work is good, and there's lots to do.
Well, then $40, what is your verdict?
I think it's a solid buy.
Wow, sounds good.
It is good. It's actually better than the first game, too. So if you're trying to choose between both of them, they play fairly similar, but this one has more content. So I don't know if you just jump to this one.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm definitely planning on buying it at some point. Just to keep my, I have all the compile hard games on Nintendo thing going.
You actually do have them all?
I think I do have them all currently. The newest Neptunia one, I think I'm missing because I ordered a physical version and it hasn't arrived yet.
Mm.
Was it a limited run thing?
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Neptunia is good stuff, so hopefully it gets its ass on.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I find it, after I got my Darius Slate collection, I'm like, I'm done worrying about when a pre-order gets here now. Worried about that damn game for 10 months.
I gotta say also, you are the only person I've ever met who pronounces Darius, and I'm not saying that it's wrong or right, because I've never known. I just always heard people say Darius.
I only learned 2 months ago that that is the official pronunciation, based on, really? Like, yeah, that's the actual pronunciation. We just think it's Darius because that's an American male name.
Mm-hmm.
Darius, like, it, I think it means something different. Well, I mean, it's all based on something common, like, between the two. But yeah, the Japanese pronunciation of it is, like, is Darius of, or something that sounds like that. And yeah, like, I'm the same way because I've been playing Darius Twin on the Super Nintendo ever since, like, 20 years ago. And I've always said Darius, but then, like I said, I was just in a chat room the other day and somebody was talking about it, and then ever since then, and then they showed their sources and I was like, oh, well, yeah, it is Darius.
Now we've been learned.
Yeah.
I'll probably still call it Darius. Though.
Like, if you want to pronounce it Darius, like, that's totally fine. Like, yeah. It's just nonsense. It's not like, you know.
You want to know what else is nonsense?
What's that?
Santa Tracker. Darius
had a twin.
What?
Santa Tracker.
Oh, Santa Tracker.
It is back on sale this week. It is 49 cents.
That's twice as much as I paid for it, almost.
I jumped on. I had gold coins, so I jumped on it. It downloaded. I am going to check out the vibration bass later on.
Special song.
Feel the vibration.
It's an experience. I wish that I hope that gets utilized somehow in other, like, games. That's a callback, by the way, folks, is that Santa Tracker, the weird ass, like, app on the Switch. I guess there's a game in there too, but it has this song, and if you choose to play the song, it's just right there in the front menu. If you have the Joy-Cons or a Pro Controller attached, you know, something with vibration function, it will actually vibrate out the bass line, like, from the actual controller to a, like, you know, a basic Christmas song, like a public domain Christmas song.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that.
It's the damnedest thing. Oh.
49 cents if you are interested. Chris, your verdict. Buy it. Okay.
We'll buy it, obviously.
All right. Well, third game to talk about tonight is called Geo Rifters, developed by Busy Toaster Games, published by Leo Fool, released September 18th on the Switch for $29.99. Ground is your weapon in the fast-paced battle arena of Geo-Rifters. Team up with or against your friends to punch portals, twist tunnels, flip lasers, and steal the ground from under each other using unique arsenal of weapons and abilities in this ground-busting adventure. Chris, we covered this one on Xbox a while ago. We had an interview on the show. What did you think of it on the Switch?
I like it. So, yeah, I guess we've already talked about, like, kind of what it is. Basically, it's a puzzle platformer where you go in from room to room. Your main protagonist is a girl called Candy, and she's got this, like, weird mech suit with these big old claws and stuff. And the game's all about, like, trying to light up all of these what they call crystal energizers or something like that, so that you can open the door at the end of the level and go through it. And of course, doing that involves basically manipulating the level through this character, which is to say, punching, like, blocks and causing, like, the whole row of blocks to move. And you can punch, of course, in any of the four directions. And you can also pull, like, a whole row towards you using her bubblegum shotgun thing, whatever. And, you know, everything's got kind of candy-based, you know? It's, where's the place that they're in? Like, Sweetland or something like that?
I don't remember the name.
Something like, I don't know.
My aging memory can't remember anything.
But yeah, like basically you do that and, you know, it's just got like all these different functionalities that you can do. There's another character called Chief who can flip a whole bunch of blocks, like in a larger block. He can like flip part of the level upside down, and that will, you know, cause hazards to be displaced elsewhere or something like that. And it's all about like moving the hazards out of the way and kind of, you know, moving the blocks where you get your path through the level and also, you know, getting all those goodies. Sadly, I didn't get to play the multiplayer, which is 2 to 4 players strictly. So didn't have a 2 to 4 player. But yeah, apparently. So there's
Cole. Did you try the multiplayer back on the Xbox? Don't remember. For GeoRifters?
I don't think so.
We are terrible at our jobs.
Yeah.
Well, with the pandemic.
We all played the story adventure. None of us did the multiplayer.
That's fine.
Oh, we suck.
I think it was one of those cases where I didn't have anybody to play it with because I was keeping really fucked up hours.
And my excuse is pandemic.
Yeah, and I have cats.
Yes, cats. Exactly. And cats don't know how to play Switch.
Yeah.
They just bat at the stick sometimes. So yeah, like really, I guess like, you know, besides lots and lots of levels and ramping up the difficulty and such, it seems like most of what this game's about is like going to be like, you know, the multiplayer, which brings 4 characters into it. There's also a large amount of collections. Like you can collect all kinds of, a little bit like Fall Guys. You earn in-game currency through playing through the levels, and those can be spent on different customization options for your characters. Plus, I think there's like 7 different characters that you can eventually unlock. So there's a good amount of content in this game, and of course lots of stuff to earn. But yeah, like basically it's all about the cleverness of the stage design, you know, like I said, punching and pulling and like, you know, getting everything. And starting from World 2, they also introduce a timer that persistently goes down even between levels. So you kind of end up having to like think fast. But fortunately,
yeah, Cole, you loved the timer, didn't you?
Oh yeah,
it's not fantastic. It's not a very merciful timer, is it?
No, no, and I'm already pretty anti anything that times you in the first place.
Yeah,
and it like
wants to
be that flawless with it makes it even worse.
Yeah, because they had a bonus like early on for if you beat a level, which by the way. They have, like, levels have different stages. So if you die too many times, you have to start the level over, which is to start from stage 1 of that level. So you don't just get to, like, proceed infinitely from wherever the last time you came through a door. You have a limited amount of lives before you have to start, like, maybe 5 floors back. And all those stages are what are being timed combined. So if you do poorly on, like, the first level, that's going to kind of screw you over for the rest of the levels. So that's another thing that adds a lot of challenge. But yeah, if you are the kind who like to like take puzzles slowly, because really some of these are pretty complex. So there's a lot of like kind of dying and then proceeding a little bit more and, you know, trying to like kind of speed run through the stuff that you already know in order to get to the end. So, you know, that's appealing to certain people, but, you know.
Yeah, you know what else is appealing? The fact that Awesome Prime dropped 20 biddies. Prime, thank you for the biddies. George.
Drop it, bitch!
Yeah, that's right, George. So, Chris, GeoRifters, $30. What do you think of it?
I think at 30, if you don't have the 2 to 4 players to take advantage of the battle arena, I would give it a try it. Because, yeah, for the kind of for a puzzle room like game, to me, like I've never paid $30 for one. I think the only one is like that one, and I can't even remember the title of it. Umihara Kawase, I want to say.
I don't anyways, even know what you said, so I'll just agree with you.
That's okay. I'll pop a link in chat or something. Anyways, at 29 for a strictly single player experience, unless you're really into timing challenges and unlocking a whole bunch of stuff, I'm going to give it a try it, but it is quality. I love the writing in it, by the way. It's very funny.
Cool. And if you have friends, obviously give it a go because you have friends and we don't.
Yeah, if you got a, if you're one of the lucky ones that has a bubble, this is a good thing to throw in there.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Welcome to Elk, developed and published by Triple Topping, released September 17th on Xbox One and Steam for $14.99. Welcome to Elk is a biographical adventure set on an island like no other, where every character you encounter has a story to tell. From the weird and wonderful to the dark and desperate, all the tales told on Elk are based on true stories of life on the road less traveled. All this sounds right up your alley.
Yeah, get it?
Road?
Much.
Alley?
Oh my God.
Get it?
I'm not happy about this. I have a confession. Okay. I beat Welcome to Elk previously.
Did you?
And I was playing it again just now. Yeah.
So what do you think of it?
I really adore this game. Let me go ahead and preface this whole review with, just because this game has charmingly adorable art, do not think that it is a charmingly adorable game. This is definitely like if Night in the Woods hadn't pulled any punches. And it's kind of funny that I actually bring up Night in the Woods, because Welcome to Elk uses Night in the Woods' yarn spinner for dialogue. The engine that they use for the dialogue in Night in the Woods is what they use for Welcome to Elk. Mm-hmm. So you play as a character named Frigg. F-R-I-G-G.
Nice.
And Frigg has found herself on a lonely little island called Elk. Duh. And upon her arrival, she is taken by Jan, who is the character that is kind of serving as her mentor while she's on the island. And she is she's meant to work with Jan in the wood shop. But her time on the island doesn't see her doing so many wood projects as it does seeing her interacting and learning the stories of the characters that live there. This is where things kind of go sideways very quickly. As soon as Frigg arrives on the island, she goes to the Hermit Bar, where everybody in town is gathered together to remember the old brewer who had come to an untimely demise, if you will, and left his fortunes to his son, and his son was now Mr. Nolan, and was basically the one wealthy dude on the island while everybody else struggled in poverty, right? So, your first night there, you're basically introduced to all the different characters. So you meet Freddy, and Freddy's mother. Freddy is the one child on the island. There's only the one. She's the only kid. And
that
as
would
you can
suck see, to be the only
that
kid.
Terribly sucks. There is one other character who is pregnant. And it was funny because when I first saw the character, I was like, she looks like she's supposed to be pregnant. But my brain tells me, don't ever assume anybody's pregnant. They might just be fat. And like the game takes its good old sweet time to verify whether or not she's actually knocked up. And every time I saw the character, I was like, is she? Is she not? I don't fucking know. She's knocked up. And it becomes a plot point later because there's only one doctor on the island who isn't actually a doctor. Like, he took some nursing classes, but he didn't really finish anything. And basically, he's really good at giving everybody Band-Aids, which proves to be a problem because a lot of people on this island have really heartbreaking stories to tell. And they could benefit from some therapy. I'm trying to think of a way that, like, I can share some of the stories without full-on spoiling the game. And I don't think I can. Even though, I will say this, the developers actually made all the stories that are in the game public. Because this is some heavy topics of conversation. And they didn't want anybody to be blindsided. Which is nice. It was helpful for them to do that. But there is definitely a lot of Fuck, how do I say this without spoiling? There's a lot of alcohol abuse. There's some problematic relationships. There was actually a subplot where the major character is pretty heavily harassed by the local asshole and his cronies, and it gets pretty explicit, and it's pretty difficult to read, honestly. That said, I think that within the context of the game, it tracks and it works, and it doesn't feel like it's just crammed in there to make you feel bad. Rather, it's actually building on this world and building on these characters and telling you their stories, as opposed to just, well, this guy's just a dick, you know? Like, there's a reason he's a dick. Everything comes full circle, so that even by the end of it, even though it's still fairly ambiguous, by the end of it, you're like, yeah, it all tracks. I can't tell one story that's super funny.
Okay.
And it's not, it's, well, I don't know if I would say it's super funny, but it doesn't spoil anything. But there's one of the mini stories is about a couple, and the couple had a reoccurring phrase, out of beer, out of here. And they would basically go anywhere as long as there was alcohol on offer. But the moment the beer ran out, they would just straight up dip. Didn't matter what was going on. Didn't matter who was talking to them. When the well ran dry, they were gone. And they would say, out of beer, out of here. And they would go. And there's literally one moment where you and a couple of the other characters are on a fishing boat. And it dawns on them they've run out of beer. And they're out in the middle of this lake in this frozen mountain. And the one goes, out of beer, out of here. And shoop! Into the water, and she's gone.
Oh my god.
It's so overwhelmingly ridiculous. So as Frigg learns the stories of the characters on the island, she finds herself waking up in the morning to discover that the stories that she's learned have been written down and placed in a bottle on her kitchen table. So you can actually go back every day and reread these stories and get a refresher on them. If there's something happening and you're like, what the fuck is that a reference to? You go back and reread the stories and see what it was, which is nice. Sometimes I found in the beginning, the first two acts of the game, the stories were like a rehash of what had happened during the day. I did find that during the third act, occasionally it would feel more like I got the bottle before the story finished out. And so it kind of spoiled it if I read the bottle. Hmm. And I had to get to a point where I was like, I know there's a new bottle, but I'm not going to read it. You know, I want to see what happens first. Because it was definitely a little spoilery if I read it instead. The other thing that I want to throw out there is that there are... The game for the most part, its gameplay is the dialogue, but it has a ton of incredibly creative mini games. And I could just sit and replay it just for these mini games over and over. Your very first night, you're in a Simon Says style dance battle with one of the characters. And so, it pops up and basically will show one of the face buttons that you need to press. Each face button does a certain dance move. So if you're paying attention to the other character and copying them instead of paying attention to the face buttons, you're going to get it wrong. And the more wrong you get it, the more you have to drink. And the more you drink, the more drunk you get. And the more times you puke and comment on the fact that you can see the shrimp in your puke before you get home that night.
Feels like Saturday night. Holy cow.
I would like to add, the reason I was particularly replaying at this moment is because there is one achievement for finding a dedicated puke button. Mm-hmm. I haven't found it yet.
Interesting.
I'm working on it.
Well, puke shrimp needed.
A second type of mini game is one where they sit you down and they teach you a card game. And it's literally, it's like a modified version of Uno. But each card has a point value and you have to put down the cards, can't go over 10. If you go over 10, you bust and you lose one of your lives. And the funny part is that the little life icons are Mario one-ups. Oh, God. And when you lose your turn or you bust 10, you have to tear up your little Mario one-up. There's one where you're just being a bartender and tending everybody and making their beer, and you have to get the right amount of beer head on and your foam, and like they sit and thought of everything as far as crazy mini games go. Like, you can just sit and flush the toilet and she'll constantly make cracks about how this whole island there's one toilet that flushes and it's in the fancy dude's house. Nope. And it's pink.
Am I going to have to intervene to stop you from giving examples? You're going to give away the whole game at this point.
This isn't even a fraction of it. I was so shocked at how in-depth everything is. Because when you're first introduced to Elk, everything's black and white. Your characters are colored in, but everything's black and white. And then very quickly you discover that anything in the world you can and should interact with has color. If you're supposed to fuck with it, there's color. And that is such a creative way, because you would think it would stand out in a way that would feel jarring or look out of place. And yet instead, it just kind of like works as a guide for your eye. You're like, oh, shit, I should go look at that poster, you know? Or you're like, oh, I need to look at... Nope, can't tell you those things.
No, something that we should point out is I'm pretty sure the game is misrated on the store page. On the store page, it's only listed as a T rating, where on Steam and the trailer list it as an M rating. And even on the trailer, the auto plays on the Xbox store drops an F-bomb. So I'm guessing the M rating is pretty accurate.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of language. There are a couple of scenes, because the whole thing is about learning stories. There are times where during her dream sequences, Frigg breaks the fourth wall and goes into the actual real world. And there are these auto-played FMV videos of people telling somebody's story. And it's important because in the game, all the stories are real.
No.
They're all true stories, which is pretty fucked up, truthfully. But all the stories are real. And so it's kind of harrowing when it breaks that fourth wall and you have somebody in the flesh sitting there telling you what you've been experiencing with the characters. It really drives it home that, no, this is, you know, despite its cutesy aesthetic, it's real stories and people, these are lived experiences.
Well,
I will point out one other thing. I do have one complaint about the game as much as I've enjoyed it.
Okay.
Despite being broken down into acts and the actual gameplay itself being broken down into days where you have a verifiable start to the day and a verifiable end when you go to bed at night, when you replay, you just have to go through the whole game again. There is no chapter select. There is no story select. I would love to see something in that regard, because I missed three achievements in my playthrough and I'm going to have to go through the whole game again. And there aren't any guides. So if I miss them again this time, guess what?
Fuck them.
There I go again. No, because I'm going to get this shit. But I would really love to have seen some kind of story or chapter, day select, something in that regard. I understand why it's not there, because I want to point out this entire game is programmed by one person. There's a team that worked on all the art and the stories and all of that other shit, but the programming itself is one person, and that's impressive, but it also means they don't necessarily have the resources to do something like chapter select.
No.
Which sucks, and I would love to see the game do well enough that they could maintain it and maybe add in something like that in the future.
Well, I don't think I need to ask for your verdict, because anytime you like a game, you go long. So I'm guessing this is a buy it.
Ah, yes, I love this game. Please buy.
I'm good at this. I'm learning with you.
Oh, yeah.
Next game to talk about is called Wintermoor Tactics Club, developed by EVC, published by Versus Evil, released September 10th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $19.99. It was hard enough for Alicia at the famed Wintermoor Academy before it erupted into a snowball war. Now her club's only hope is to transform from nerdy nobodies into fantasy heroes, unravel a reality-bending mystery, test your strategic mettle against an avalanche of colorful characters, and don't forget to make friends. Pernell, tell us about this one.
Okay, so this game turned out to be a fairly interesting title for me, because I am a sucker for, I won't lie, I'm a sucker for the whole children at school element, getting along and hanging out. But this one did the bonus of taking place in 1981. So it throws a little bit of a retro vibe in there, too, with no internet and all that good stuff. The premise of the game in general is that you are the main character, Alicia, who is a member of a CNC club, not to be confused with D&D club, which, well, it should be confused with D&D club. and the idea is that her and her friends play D&D at the, or sorry, CNC at this school gleefully and cheerfully. But one day the dean of the school decides to hold a meeting to announce that all the clubs are going to have to fight it out in the form of snowball battles. And for each club that loses, it will be disbanded and no longer able to exist on campus. A very odd premise for a game, yes, but also one that runs with a bit of like youthful imagination, because the whole idea is that there's something a little bit more sinister at work here. Like, why would the dean of the school have this challenge with such high stakes involved? Blah, blah, blah. But these kids who are anxious and concerned about how will they be able to compete, we're just nerds. Like, literally, that's the idea. Like, we're just nerds. We can't compete with the jocks and such. And they realize that CNC has a lot in common with these snowball fights. And if they fight these snowball fights as if they were playing CNC, they'll stand a chance at winning. Hence, you get the interesting, imaginative prospect of a game where battles are done in the form of D&D battles, but they're actually snowball fights. So those are like the main story battles, is you fighting against various clubs in the school in the form of like these D&D battles. But even aside from that, you actually do like normal CNC battles as well. But the way those are fought come in the form of like narrative elements. So let's say, for example, you might be meeting in a club and you want to discuss, you know, a strategy for how you're going to win in a battle. So rather than talk about it, you'll go onto your CNC table, put your little miniatures down, and you'll have a battle. And that's the actual game. Like, that's when you go into an actual battle sequence with a bunch of little critters. And in some case, they'll even like get a little imaginative, like take like an inanimate object and say, this is going to represent a big monster that you got to fight, you know, which is kind of funny in its own right. Like, the idea is like, this is supposed to be a giant snake, but we don't have a snake mantra. So here, use this salt shaker. But what ends up happening is that the characters end up getting placed onto the map, and then the gameplay itself is done like a turn-based RPG, like strategy RPG. You can move your characters across squares, and they have a number of different attacks that they can utilize for damage. So you start out, each character starts with one normal attack, but then you also can learn other attacks either from way the story itself or through something called a crucible quest, which you can take on during like as like a side mission, and if you beat the battle with while fulfilling the handicap conditions, you'll unlock a new ability or a new skill for a character. But you'll have those, and then you'll also eventually end up getting tactic attacks, which is essentially super moves that each character can get, where as long as you have enough points allocated or stored up, you can spend them, like five of them, to do a super move, which usually involves like a 3x3 bomb attack or like a plus shaped, like stun and super strong stun attack, so on and so forth. As you play through the game also, as you win battles and clubs get disbanded, every once in a while, someone from another club that got disbanded will join your club, at which point they need to get pretty much integrated with your club. So they end up getting their own class, which allows them to get their own abilities and their own things. Like, for example, early in the game, one of the first party members you meet that's outside of your club is from the psychic club. Yeah, there's like, they get weird like that, the club names, which I kind of like the psychic club. And that person decides that they're going to play as a psychomancer in the game. So you build a psychomancer character for them. And then the main character, Alicia, has to write her a narrative to get her into the game world, which I also kind of like, because I guess a little imaginative there. She's like basically starting to conceptualize what this quest will be like. And the game will give you a series of choices as she goes through different steps of the process for creating the quest to introduce her character. And they actually utilize what you choose. It doesn't get elaborate. Like, it doesn't actually change the battles or anything like that, at least from what I can tell. Because I didn't, like, reset it or anything to try other combinations. But it's still nice that the dialogue runs along with it. And it's nice that they actually go along with the choices that she chooses in the plot. I'm also pretty sure that no choices in that build will be wrong to the point where, like, it just won't work or something. But at the same time, it's nice that it's, like, it actually takes the dialogue and uses. Like, you know, you play a lot of those JRPGs where it's like, do you want to go to the basement and fight that monster? And they actually give you a choice that does nothing. Like, you don't even see the results of the text. But at least with this,
but
you
can thou
see
must. The results of the
text. Yeah, thou must. No. Well, you have to go, because if we don't, everyone will suffer. No. Well, I'm just going to stay in here until you say yes. No, 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 no. Fine. Fuck yes. Let's just go. And there it goes. At least with this, I kind of like that. Even though the game still progresses, they use the dialogue in a way that makes it still feel like you're a part of it. The progress of the game is also just kind of broken up into chapters. And each chapter, a story sequence will play out before you are left to walk around the campus to engage in a number of, like, whatever story plots exist, whether it's a main storyline quest or every once in a while a sub quest. Exploring the school itself is done by way of jumping between seven different nodes that represent different places in the school. And when you go to a node, you switch to like a small screen. You might be able to like walk around and go from like maybe three rooms or so within that node. Like, for example, the classroom area lets you go to the clubhouse for your club, the art room, and the equestrian club. And those are like the rooms in that area, but you can walk around and talk to people and stuff. And as you select different nodes, if there's a side quest available there, the game flat out tells you there is a side quest there if you want to go pursue it, which I kind of like, because what this means is that this is one of those games where I personally feel like they were going more for you to get the narrative than to make you focus on seeking out hidden garbage. Like, there's no twinkling items that you have to, you know, hump the size of the screen to find. Nothing like that. It is literally, hey, I want to go talk to this person. He wants me to help remove graffiti from the wall. I can do that. And it's just you talking to different people and engaging in them and interacting and learning more about the characters and just experiencing the school without breaking your neck to find hidden crap. I very much enjoyed that element of the game. I just enjoy the general whimsicalness of it. And I love the music in the game too. It's very solid. If anything, I'd say my only real gripe, and it's a small gripe, but it's my gripe, is every time we transition from like an area to like the nodes to like the map screen to choose a new location, the music kind of stops for a second and then it restarts. Like, it's like loading it up and it kind of just like pulls me out. Like, oh God, it's like it's just disruptive. It feels disruptive. And they put you back in. It's obviously not a game breaker, but for someone like me, it is quite an annoyance. And if there's something that you, if there's a way for you to patch that, please patch that out. Just let the load, just let the music play behind while it's loading. You don't need to stop the music track. It's the same track. You're not even changing tracks. But I mean, aside from that, there was no point where one more thing that annoyed me a little bit, I'll admit. When you're moving the cursor on the map, they make you use the thumbstick to do so, because the cross pad is used to switch between which character you want to use to give a command to. Some reason the moving of the thumbstick is a little janky for me trying to move around the map. And I usually have to be like doubly sure that I landed the cursor I wanted it to go before I initiated attack. So I have messed that up a few times. Though fortunately, the game does allow you to reset turns. You get two turn resets per battle, and you can undo movements so long as you didn't do an infinite number of times, mind you, so long as you haven't performed an attack. So I mean, they pretty much give you some tools at least to say, hey, I understand you kind of borked that turn. Just do the whole thing over. No big deal. And one last thing to mention is that every time you do one of the D&D battles or even the snowball battles, when you finish it, the game does grade you because, yep, you know they would, in the form of medals. But I will say, they never really gave me too many problems. There's a few where I had to go back and get better scores, but for the most part, nothing too brutal. It's like number of times someone got KO'd, number of turns you took, the amount of damage you took, I think, was one of them. And lastly, how many super moves you use, how many tactical turns you did. So for the most part, just use as many tactical turns as you can score up so that you can actually get credit for them. And that's pretty much how they grade you on battles.
Nice. Well, overall, $20 on this one. What do you say?
I think so long as you're not coming in this game looking for some kind of hardcore challenge, I think you're going to like the game if you're down with, like, you know, visual novel-esque titles with a hint of strategy RPG. It's a fun time.
Cool. Sounds good.
It is.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Vampire's Fall Origins, developed and published by Early Morning Studio, released September 17th on Xbox One and Switch for $12.99. For countless years, the villagers of Vampire have enjoyed a life of peace and happiness, but now rumors are spreading about a wielder of dark magic, a witchmaster. Fearing the rumors to be true, the village musters a militia to prepare for the worst. Chris, tell us about Vampire's Fall Origins.
Okay, so, basically, it's an RPG, and the story of it, like, the whole setting, is that, the chat room is, like, broke down on my computer, so I had to refresh. Okay.
Don't worry, nothing's happening.
So basically, the Airless King is dead, so the world plunges into utter anarchy and chaos. Actually, just kidding. Everybody's just fine. The world actually is doing just fine without any sort of like person like ruling everything. Until, like I said, Mr. Shadow Master comes along and starts messing stuff up. And these little towns are like scrambling to put together an army. And your character, who you name and choose a lineage of four different types of vampires, a lot like that other game that I reviewed a couple weeks ago, which just give you like small stat bonuses, so it's really just for role playing. Anywho's, once you have your character made, then you enlist to defend this small town who's scrambling to get their defenses up in case this Magi master guy, whatever, comes along, which he does. And he frags the whole place and you're the only survivor. But in surviving, quote unquote, you become a vampire. And vampires don't actually exist in this game until you. So you're basically like the first vampire. And so you get like all these powers and stuff, and you go around and like try to make sense of everything. And you can still go around and in fact, it's very recommended that you go around and still do hero stuff, complete quests and everything, because that's your that's a great source for gold and experience, which you're going to need. So the way the game actually plays is that it is an isometric top down game that will absolutely remind you of Diablo as soon as you start it up. You're like, oh, this is Diablo. It's even got the same font, like the O's with the crosses inside of them. Like it's exactly Diablo. However, the actual battle is not pointing your cursor at an enemy and then swinging your sword at them until they die. The battles actually take place in a turn-based RPG style that is very much not Diablo. What happens is that, okay, so you've got a weapon equipped, and you also have, like, your vampire skills, and you also have, like, some other skills that are related to what they call a bloodline, aka skill tree, because it's a line of blood that goes through different skills that you increase every time you gain a level. So, basically, you can choose to simply attack the enemy, but even early on, this is not going to be sufficient because the game's very much stacked against you initially. So, like, enemies usually are going to be able to take you down, which is fine because there's no real consequence to that. If an enemy kills you, you just wake up back in the same place you were and everything's been saved. So, you know, it's one of those where if you throw yourself into a situation and, you know, some level 70 monster suddenly appears for no reason at all and then kills you in one hit, you don't have to get too mad about it. Okay. So anyways, you choose like either to attack the enemy, which is a free move, or as you use moves, or depending on what skills you've chosen, you have an action meter. And as the action meter goes up, then you can choose to do different actions. And they're very vampire-y type of actions, such as you can drink your enemy's blood, which costs like 45 points, and it does a good attack on them and restore some of your life, which is good until you find a potion maker, that's going to be your only source of like restoring your life for a while. You also can do like really cool moves, like you can send a swarm of bats after the enemy and they attack that enemy every turn, so that you kind of, it's like a poison effect, except, you know, it makes sense for a vampire to have control over an army of bats. So yeah, you just you basically run around the world map. It's very simple and straightforward. Like, wherever there's an exclamation point on the map, that is where your destination is. And whenever you've come across a person that has an exclamation point over their head, that person is part of a quest. Of course, there's a main quest which kind of tells you the story as you go along, mostly through dialogue. And then there's just a whole bunch of little side quests, and you're going to want to take them on because, like Diablo, this game has... Aw, kitty.
Kitty.
I can see and hear the kitty.
She's been sitting staring at me wanting to get on my lap, so I pick her up and now she's all whiny.
Oh,
she's adorbs.
Which one is that one anyway?
Piddles. Piddle Bear.
Piddles.
Hi, our Piddles. Oldest.
Aw. Okay, so like Diablo, this game has, you know, a starter set of like equipment that costs like 10 gold or whatever, but in the same, like, even early on, shops will have like rare and unique items that are like 1800 gold. And gold is not easy to come by in this game. You will come across random chests and things like that, but mostly you're going to get your stuff through questing. And in fact, even random encounters are kind of rare in the game. You actually have to purchase items or gain skills to get more enemies to appear on the map. Like, you could run from one town to another and only run across two things, but those two things might be dangerous enough to actually put the hurt on you until you get yourself equipped. So I really, really enjoyed this game, actually, to make a long story short, a long review short. It gives you a great sense of growth. Like, you really go from feeling helpless to feeling confident, through merit. Like, it doesn't really feel like you just stumble across like the right item and suddenly you're kicking ass. Like, you really do kind of learn to balance your skills, because you have like three different weapon type skills. You have, you know, you get 4 points that you can dump into your bloodline, aka skill tree. And you really have to like think about those four things. Like, you can up your defense, your vitality, your action bar. Like, you can make it race faster or add more to the pool. You can increase the golden item drop percentage, so, you know, making yourself richer earlier. But it all like raises up so incrementally that it might feel a little daunting to like people who are newer to RPGs, but to folks who are kind of forged in the fires of games like Diablo and, you know, more Western isometric type RPGs, the real hardcore stuff, like, this one's going to feel very like familiar. And I also, one thing, and this is a personal thing, I love that your character really zips across that map. Like, I guess because you're a vampire or something, you walk fast and you like, you make tracks, and that's really, really nice to me.
Yeah, I like when you move quick in a game. Don't go slow, you know, just chop, yeah, chop. Let's fucking go.
And it's got that Dark Ages dreariness to it, so it's not like it's great stuff to look at. So you do kind of want to just shift through it as fast as possible and run into that next wolf that might drop a few, like, 14 gold coins, you can finally afford that nicer cudgel. I was actually pretty impressed at how well they did with this game, considering its low price tag. So,
so for that low price tag of $12.99, what do you say?
Oh, absolutely. $12.99 is paltry for like a game like this. I can only assume that the only reason I would ever not give it a hearty buy it would be if it's just like super short, because I haven't gotten to the end, so I don't know if it's like a super short game, but I think it's been around for a while, so that might explain the low price. But yeah, anybody that's curious about this one, it has my recommendation. I think it really scratches the itch that you'll be, you know, that you'll have it when you're looking at this.
And it's cheaper than a cudgel.
It is cheaper than a cudgel. Yeah, 14 gold and you got it.
All right, next game to talk about is called The Secret Order: Return to the Buried Kingdom, developed by Sunward Games, published by Artifacts Mundi, released September 18th on Xbox One and Switch for $14.99. Get to the bottom of unexplainable events in the Buried Kingdom and save all its inhabitants in this thrilling fantasy experience. Well, it's an Artifacts game, so I kind of think I know what you're going to say.
It feels a little excessive every time I review another one of these, because it's like... I guess you just want me to repeat myself every few weeks.
Well, tell us about the story in this one.
I'm okay with it. So this is actually the 8th game in the Secret Order series. I know I bitched with the 7th that they gave us the 7th without giving us 1 through 6, but at least we've had the 7th before we got the 8th.
Yeah.
So I'm not too mad, but this is number 8. Just because I haven't played 1 through 6 and have only played 7 before this one, still a little hazy on who the characters are and why they're doing this shit. But I will tell you that this one has dragons. Ooh. And we have a return to form with Artifacts Mundi when it comes to these fantastical fairy tale worlds with just really unusual circumstances where everything's just fucking pretty. And I'm not mad about that at all. After having to break the buy it streak with a couple of the other ones, this is a nice return to form.
That's good to hear.
This is what I want. I do have to gripe a little. One of the big reasons for that price increase that we saw a while back was so that games could be a little higher quality. I don't know what the hell happened with the animations for the Secret Order 8, but they are very rough. I've seen some of the really old Artifacts Mundi games not have animations as stiff and dry as what Secret Order 8 has. There is one sequence where you are having to follow a troll, and every time, like this little rock troll creature, right? And it is moving around all around the scene, and you have to go and like solve the puzzle to get it out of the spot, and then it goes to the next spot. The animations from when it goes from one spot to the other look like they're like 15 frames a second. The rest of the scene is fine, but that troll's animations are, they're blurry, and like you can get away with something like that when your game is on a mobile device, which is how a lot of these games start their lives, and I'm aware of that. But you can get away with that when you're playing on a mobile device. But when you port up and you're going to have audiences who are playing on, you know, big screen TVs, monitors. I was playing on a 55-inch. That looks really bad. And every pixel that's out of place becomes even more prominent. This was topped off in another scene. There was actually a couple of different scenes where you could see the main character's feet as she was walking. One in particular that stayed on the top of my head was when she was crossing a log that had been down like it was a bridge. And just... It was like she wasn't even capable of bending her knees. She was just shuffling her feet across this bridge, and it was very slow and framey, and it blurred, and it just looked really bad. I'm really disappointed in that, because actually I was streaming it and I asked Aki to look up when the game was released on Steam, and it was 2019. So this was post price bump.
Yeah, but to be fair, this wasn't a first party Artifacts game. This was one of the outside companies.
But I mean, I still would have expected just a little better. I mean, if it hadn't have looked so rough, I've got a really low bar when it comes to Artifacts money games, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I love them and I don't care if the animations are bad, because sometimes you just need to play something that's really relaxing and chill and just not have to think too hard. And so I have a really low bar as far as what I'll let them get away with. And I typically, even with this one, I know it sounds like I'm bitching really hard, but I just want people to know what to expect, because I was taken aback a little bit. I was like, wow, that is some rough animation. And normally I don't even notice it. A lot of other people are like, oh, the animation's bad. I'm like, no, it looks fine. It's whatever. It's an Artifacts Monday game. And this one actually like struck me, and I was like, holy shit, that is rough. Aki corrected me. 2019 was when it was released for mobile, and then Steam was at the start of this year, and now it's on Xbox. So, I mean, it was definitely at a point where they probably should have paid for some higher animation, higher quality animation. And that's a shame, because everything else about the game is great. I absolutely loved it. I was so glad to be back in like this fantasy world with crystals and dragons, and I was like, fuck yeah, this is awesome. There are some returning characters who, because I played it like, I don't know, 2020's been 7,418 years at this point, I was like, yeah, those look vaguely familiar from the last game. But I was super into you know, just the world itself. And at times I was just a little jarred out of it. The other thing I would like to point out, great puzzles, little awkward on some of the item combination solutions. If you click everything enough, eventually you're like, well, I guess that one will work. But what was a big stickler for me here was the ending was odd. This is not the first time that Artifacts Monday game, especially one that's developed by an outside company, has had an ending that just left me putting down the controller going, what? Why? So yeah, we definitely hit that bar again, which is kind of a shame, because none of this is anything to detract away from, hey, I like an object puzzle, should I play this? The answer is yeah, sure. it's Artifacts Money, it's hidden objects and it's puzzles, and they do that part very well. But if you're really into that narrative, man, that ending is going to be a bit of a letdown. I don't want to spoil it, but I also just want to be like, whew, brace yourself. But it's still, I come from a place of somebody who just really enjoys these games.
Yeah.
You know? And so in one hand, it's, I worry about not giving an adequate review, because I feel like I'm sitting here and it sounds like I'm being really harsh. But I'm harsh because I love these games and I know they can do better in these elements, and I want to see that. But at the same time, I don't really find myself going, ah, it's broken, you shouldn't play it, because no, I won't hate it, and I had a blast, and I played it for 4 hours fucking straight. Like, I was in pain because I sat so long I forgot to stretch.
Proud of you.
I was just into it, and I was like, yes, we're going to solve all the puzzles and be happy about it. And I was, and it was just that break that I needed, and I can't be mad even for its shortcomings. So it's more of a case of, I love it, but I want you to know that it may not be the top of the heap when it comes to Artifacts Monday games.
Well, $15, your verdict?
I can't help myself, man. I still think it's a buy. Because I look at it more from the gameplay that I can't be the only one who just kind of mashes A and gets through the stories in these. Some of them grip me. But other ones, especially like when I'm starting in the middle, I'm a little like, it's a thing that's happening. Look, a dragon, you know. But I don't know. I think sometimes we all just need a break. You can only shoot so many people with sniper rifles. There's only so many zombies. There's only, you know, so many worlds that are open wide for you to explore and take out bandit camps and Templars. Sometimes you just need to slow down and play a game that lets you move at your own speed. And that's what these games do best. And that's why I love them. And I always give them a buy it, even when I get frustrated that they might not be the quality standard I think they should be.
And you go long.
Yeah. Also, next. Fuck the morphing objects. No, not next. I forgot. There's goddamn morphing objects. I hate those. Now you can go next.
Okay. Next game to talk about is called Outbreak: The Nightmare Chronicles, developed and published by Dead Drop Studios, released September 24th on PS4 for $12.99. Return to the world of survival horror. Monstrous beasts and disfigured remnants roam freely with their numbers increasing rapidly. Scattered and separated from your fellow survivors, you fled into a large manor estate to escape the relentless horde. Your only goal now is survival, but somehow you know your fate is sealed. Serlina wrote in a review of this one, and this is what she's gotta say. Greetings, SML friends and fam, it's Serlina, and this week I'll be reviewing Outbreak: The Nightmare Chronicles on PS4. Developed by Dead Drop Studios, Outbreak: The Nightmare Chronicles is a throwback to the 90s video game horror genre, complete with spooky zombies, limited inventory, zany camera angles, and possibly conceal stuff you need, and tank walking. Let's get on to the review. For those who aren't aware, The Nightmare Chronicles is the third entry in the Outbreak universe, and I've had the pleasure of reviewing the other two installments. Each game brings something different and adds or removes features that may or may not be present in the other games. TNC's major change is characters. You only have access to one, Lydia. That name might be familiar to you because she was one of the playable characters in the first installment, Outbreak: The New Nightmare. If you are lucky and capable enough to get through all the scenarios in that game, you'll find that The Nightmare Chronicles picks up exactly that where that game left off. Through some shenanigans, you find yourself alone in a manor, hoping desperately that it's safe, but knowing that it's not. Let's talk about the changes in gameplay. You have the opportunity to choose, hey, I made it through there, between modern or tank walking. You're back to limited inventory space with only 6 slots, but there is inventory management in the form of storage chests. Thank you, Chris, which is awesome. Anything that you put in storage will stay there, but only for that chapter. You also have to manually save your game, and to do this, you must have a floppy disk and access to a hard drive. This is a double-edged sword for me. I'm fine with manual saves. I'm not fine that I must sacrifice an inventory slot to always have one. Normal difficulty, there's always a disk with a hard drive, but you can't count on that in higher difficulties when resources are scarce, so plan accordingly. Graphically speaking, this is the best-looking installment by far. It's not even a contest. Lydia looks great, the manor looks awesome, and the ambiance and atmosphere is appropriately spooky. This hurts me because the game looks great, but the items aren't highlighted, so finding quite a few of them is tricky. In the very beginning of the game, you have to look at a wall to get a code to progress, only there's nothing to even indicate that there's something written on the wall. I was about to toss my controller in frustration and declare the game unplayable, till I started randomly punching the X button and the text popped up. Also, the narrative of the game is better. The dev is improving in this aspect, but in the beginning, the chapters are set up a bit too well. The narrative talks about how Lydia finds a first aid kit and patches herself up and so on and so forth before we even have control of her. Don't tell me that. Let me experience it for myself. For instance, it's much more powerful if once we gain control of her, she's hurt, but we find that kit at the start. Do we use it now or do we wait because we feel we might not get another one? Which one is the better experience? Outbreak: The Nightmare Chronicles is available on PS4 on September 24th for $12.99, and should you buy this one, I give it a solid try it. Again, this game type isn't for everyone, but if you're jonesing for this throwback, you'll love it. The Nightmare Chronicles was a solid improvement overall, but I can't help but wonder if you can be too true to the 90s video game horror genre and incorporate modern aspects to create a brand new experience. There's a couple games left in the series to be released, and I'm see what direction they take. Chris, did you get time with this one?
Yeah, a little bit.
What did you think of it?
So definitely, well, now that I've played all three of the Outbreak games that are currently available, this is the best looking one for sure. Yeah, it's like really, you know, it's interesting because it kind of like it's just funny to me how like the game has like progressed, like with the same character and the same storyline from going like through the, you know, abandoned or like, you know, the outbreak, you know, building that you have to go through and like try to get to different floors and stuff like that. You know, that whole thing that's been, you know, done to like the outside kind of zombie apocalypse sort of survival thing. And then into a haunted mansion. I just, I love this sequence of events there. But anyways, yeah, it does look better. It does play a little bit better. It's still the kind of thing where like, yeah, on the occasions that you do run into zombies, like you gotta, you know, shoot them like 7 or 8 times in the face. And, you know, you only have so many guns and bullets in your inventory. So a lot of it is like kind of, you know, sort of, strategically giving up on certain items. But I do like that the chests are a nice addition, that you can actually store items now. And, I thought the floppy disk thing was actually kind of funny. It's a, you know, it's a floppy disk drive recorder type thing. The other thing, and this is in all three games. So most of the story is told through journal entries. You know, like that's the norm in horror games. The graphic representation of a journal entry is a full leather bound book. It's just kind of sitting out. And I'm like, man, people leaving all these leather bound books out. It's just great. Like really early on, the game like gives you like certain puzzles, and they are a little obtuse, but you know, like there's number puzzles and things like that. And it was one of those things where it's like, okay, so they're like, well, the second puzzle in the whole thing, and it's just like to open the second door. So it's like right at the beginning, it's like, well, the code is a very simple, you know, pattern. So it's like A equals 1, B equals 4, you know, B or C equals 2, D equals, you know, 5, whatever, and so on and so forth. And then you get to the door and it's just like, what's the solution? And it's just numbers, right? So you're like, well, it's this pattern, so I guess I got to put in the pattern. And like, it took me a while to figure out, because there was no prompt. You're supposed to like investigate this big sploosh of blood on the wall where somebody has written a code. And they're like, the code is ADA, you know, CE, you know, like they wrote it in the game's code. So you like have to like sit there and figure it out. So I'm like, it's a little goofy, but honestly, I mean, aren't video games in general?
Yeah.
I agree with the email that the dev is like more finding their feet on this kind of thing. And of course, it's even at the easiest difficulty, it's pretty difficult, and it has 3 difficulty levels above that. So it really is for people who want to, like,
who want a really, challenge.
Yeah. And you know, I do appreciate that. And like I said, if you're looking at this list of Outbreak games and you're like, I can only play one, I would say this is probably the one to pick up, because it does feel the most, classic, for lack of a better term. And it's the most polished, but it's still
so like I said, it's we do have one more to go in 2 weeks.
Okay. Well,
so we'll find that out.
Might be the one then.
Yeah. We'll find out then. Cole, did you have anything you wanted to add in with Outbreak?
No, Chris no. pretty much said what I usually always say. It's just that I appreciate how much the dev puts into like growing and taking feedback and stuff, and how the games have improved over time.
And rumor has it that they might be coming to the Switch soon, so Pernell, we might throw you on those.
Yep.
Oh boy.
But speaking of Pernell, the next game to talk about is called EXP Parasite, developed by Zimagor, published by Greyhead Studio, released September 17th on Xbox One for $7.99, a hardcore 2D arcade game for old school players. The user controls an experimental parasite that infects different mechanisms, overcomes countless obstacles, and fights powerful bosses to achieve goals set by an unknown puppeteer. Pernell, tell us about this one.
Quick review tone. This game you control a parasite. You just stated that. So covered that part.
Fucking yeah!
You go between a variety of stages. Each level, the way the game works is that the parasite is trying to navigate a maze to get to the end and exit it. On the levels, the controls for the parasite are just basically left stick to walk left and right, and then the A button allows you to do that thing that's become popular with the inversion flip. like Gravity Man and a Mega Man state or something. Or the Mega Man Gravity Man state. Whatever. Point is, push A, you go to the ceiling. Press A again, you'll hit back, land back on the ground. You can maneuver yourself as you're in the air as well. And you're pretty much dodging a bunch of obstacles and enemies. Now, the gimmick that makes this about being a parasite is that every once in a while, you'll come across an enemy that, unlike the normal ones, is blue and deactivated. When you come across such an enemy, you can drop on top of it to take control of it. So, for example, there might be like a rolling tread thing that's just a rolling tank. You can land on top of it, and now you can move the tank left to right and control it and make it like plow through some blocks that may be destructible. Or if you want to come across like a little hopping device, you can land on top of it, and now you can fly around the screen. Like you can hop up and down in the air and kind of hover and raise and lower yourself and progress to the stage. So that really, at the end of every level, you do fight a boss, and each boss, you don't physically attack them on your own, except for in cases where you may happen to come across a device you can control that fires bullets, in which case then you do directly attack the boss. But otherwise, you'll likely be performing some kind of action to trick the boss into killing itself or reflecting the boss's attacks back at itself, things like that. Once you beat a stage, there is a score criterion that the game will rate you on. Amount of time it took you to beat the stage, number of lives you lost on the stage, the amount of collectibles you found on the stage, which usually consists of crystals that give you extra lives. And the difficulty, because at the beginning of a stage, you can choose between easy, normal, or hard. With easy giving you no rewards, normal being normal, and then hard being what gets you the difficulty reward if you complete the stage. You spend the rewards being like plasma currency at the game shop. And don't get all excited because it's nothing complicated. It's just some simple things. You can use it to upgrade how many lives you start each level with, invulnerability, and time slowing. And then you can further kind of upgrade those abilities to make them like last longer or like slow time even more than before, you know, stuff like that. All in all, though, the game itself is brutally tough. Like, it's just getting that out there right now. It's a tough game. They do at least give you lots of lives per stage, but don't be surprised if you actually end up blowing through 13 lives in one go and then wondering how that happened. Because you probably will, despite the fact that the game is actually also fairly generous with checkpoints. But the game as a whole, if you're okay with that sort of massacre thing, it's surprisingly still enjoyable. The one thing I would automatically suggest is the moment you start the game, going into the menu settings and turning the sound down. Not the music, the sound. Because I don't know what they were thinking with the default, but the sound is way higher than the music, and everything makes grating noises. And you'll want that mess muted or at least low enough that it doesn't become an ear sore. But other than that, honestly, I found the game to be fine. I just need to be in the right mindset to play it because, like I said, the game will piss you off because it is not easy to play. But it's fun. And the music is actually fairly decent, too. So I would, well, you're dealing.
Okay, $8. Tell me.
I think.
Tell me, Purnell. Tell me.
Try it.
Tell me. Tell me.
Gonna try this game.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting. I'm curious to check this one out myself. For only $8, I might grab it.
I think if you do, let me know.
Will do. But one final game to talk about tonight is called Tamiku, developed by Joy-San, published by Rattlelake Games, released September 18th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $4.99. You are an alien from a distant galaxy who is totally obsessed with blow-up balloons. Having popped every last balloon on your home planet, now you must venture to other worlds in search of more balloons to pop. Chris, how many balloons did you pop?
All of them. Actually, yes. There's... What's really funny is that in the story, the actual like game story, like it kind of emulates like the bad translations you'd see in something like a Taito arcade game or something, which seems to be where this drew its inspiration. But it actually says that he's so obsessed with balloons that he blew up he blew up his home planet, like whole planet. And I was like, wow, this has become dark. So. This guy likes balloons so much, he destroyed his own home planet, and now he's after Earth. But no.
Sounds like a thrill.
I know, it should be. It would be great if you were, like, like a balloon maker and you were like trying to defend the world against this guy like coming down to anyway, whatever. That's not what this game is. It is a retro throwback arcade game, very much couched in that kind of early 80s style, maybe mid 80s, where you do play this kid and you go through these stages, which are, you know, these multi-tiered stages, and you try to pop all the balloons that are laying around. So in that sense, it's got a little bit of a Pac-Man thing to it, but there's enemies on each stage that follow patterns and also can chase you through the floors, you know, in certain spots on the floors, of course. And if you've played an arcade game, you'll know exactly which kind of floors those are. And in that sense, it's a little bit Donkey Kong. So it's all about popping all the balloons on a stage. And then there's blue balloons, which you pop by simply touching them. And then red balloons, which you have to actually grab and like sit there and inflate them until they blow up. And in that sense, it's got a little bit of Dig Dug in it. So it's just kind of like this catch-all of like different arcade flavors and styles from, you know, what has been. And it's wrapped up in a nice, fun little package. Yeah, I mean, basically, as soon as you pop all the balloons, and provided you haven't used up all your three lives, of course, there's free continues, but you have to start the entire stage over if you get a game over. Once you beat the stage, you move on to the next stage, and of course, if it's your first time beating that stage, you get a trophy. It's a very easy completion because it's a rattle-like a game. Well, I mean, yeah, we can't say that every time now, but this is classic rattle-like, you know, hand you a platinum trophy, which I believe Joe has gotten now.
Well, I got my 1,000 achievement points on Xbox. Cole, did you play this one at all?
I did right before we went live.
Did you complete it right before we went live?
I absolutely did.
So there you go.
All right.
It's yeah, I mean, it's fun, it's fast, it's very simple, but it gets you hooked.
Well, $5, your verdict.
I mean, at the very least it's a fucking why not, but I would say it's also a buy it. I like arcade games like this. I like when they make throwbacks that are, you know, they feel familiar yet they're brand new. Now there's not a whole lot of complexity to it or anything like that. Not that there needs to be, but yeah, I mean, it's $5 is the sweet spot for a game like this. I would say, yeah, go for it.
Awesome. All right. Well, yeah, that's it. We made it. We did it.
Yay!
Hour 40. Not bad.
Ran the gauntlet.
All right.
Yeah, it's about 20 minutes shorter than I expected. I was expecting a 2-hour show. So.
In your face.
Yeah. Fucking prove me wrong, bastards. Yeah.
We need we need to do one of those 24-hour streams that's so popular wherein we cover 5 games.
No.
When the new Call of Duty comes out.
No.
Yeah, I could sit and do a 24-hour stream just talking about the new Call of Duty by myself.
Probably.
And still be like, but there's so much more.
You also get more gun, gun, gun.
There's so many pew pews.
Pews are good. But yeah, that's it for this episode. Thanks, all of you, for being here. No interview this episode, so I don't have anyone else to thank. But we're going to have some cool interviews coming up. So keep an eye out for some future episodes. And anyone have any final words to end this one?
I'm too tired to end it.